Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday to you. I hope everybody had a good week, you know, overall. For some reason, this week just seemed super long to me. But today, I was actually going to talk about fitness and meal prepping today. But a couple of my friends wanted me to talk about why I took a break from coaching. They thought it would be interesting to kind of hear them. My thoughts on that, because a lot of people don't really know or have, you know, never really asked or just made, you know, made their own assumptions or came to their own conclusions as to why I took a break from coaching. And so I'm going to talk about that today. I feel like my day is completely gone because typically my church is still not like in person. So I typically on Sundays, I just, you know, get up, do church. I take a break from working out on Sundays, cause it's a day of rest. And, I, you know, do church and then I, you know, just kind of piddle. But today I'm actually going to do one of my meal preps with a friend of mine. She's going to teach me how to make cabbage. And if you don't know me, baby, I cannot cook. And I'm trying, though. I took some cooking classes in college because I had a nutrition minor. And bless my heart, I'm pretty sure I got an A for effort. But yeah, she told me that. I was, like, burning chocolate and everything. And I just feel like my day has gotten away from me because I'm supposed to meet her at 3:30 and then it's 2:10 and I still have to shower and finish this. So today is just a big, but I will say this. The reason why my days are starting to run, I don't know if you guys remember back on an episode when I talked about COVID and the side effects from it. I had COVID for about 2 months and all the way back when I would say it was fairly new, but I would say I got my last positive test in July, because I went back to work at the end of July, and I finally got a negative somewhere around there towards the end of July. I have COVID insomnia. It's like a weird side effect from it, and when I tell you I cannot sleep, I'll just be up for no reason, looking silly. And I'll be, like, tired. Like, my body will be like, everything in me says you're dog tired. And I'll get in the bed, and then I'll just lay there. And then by the time I look at my watch, it'll be, like, 5 a.m. And it'll be 5:30, and then I'll fall asleep at, like, 6-something. It'll be time to get up. And especially when that happens during my work week. And the doctor prescribed Ambien to me. And I took Ambien one night and I slept through work one morning. If it tells you how long I slept, I took it at like 9 because he told me to take it, you know, take it about 30 minutes before you're kind of getting ready to wind down for bed. So when you actually lay down, you'll actually fall asleep. And I slept from like probably, I think the last time I remember was 9:30. And I slept to like noon the next day. I told you guys before, like, anytime I take medicine, it's, like, super, I'm very sensitive to medication. So, Ambien is not it. They are still in that bottle. But I need something. Y'all need to hit me with some suggestions or something. I've tried melatonin, but it gives me a headache. So, I kind of have to stay away from that. I don't know what the deal is with it. I took melatonin a couple of times before I had COVID, and it never bothered me. After COVID, when I say I have a headache, it's like somebody is drumming on my head. So I don't know. Like COVID just affects our body in just weird ways. But let's go ahead and get into this episode. Like I said, we're going to talk about why I took a break from coaching. And we'll go from there. Let's get into it. Yeah, so basically first what I'm gonna do is I've kind of touched on it a little bit, my coaching career, but I'm gonna talk about Kind of give you the background first. So that's what we'll talk about first. So I, right out of high school, I went to a school. The schools don't matter. So I'm not going to say, you know, which ones. It doesn't matter. Went for basketball right out of college, got injured. I had a compound fracture in my left ankle. And back then in 2000, aging myself a little bit. I graduated from high school in 2000. I had an ankle injury my senior year on some skates, believe it or not. One of my friends, every year she had, her birthday was on Halloween, and she would have a party every year. And that particular year she had a skating party. Now, every athlete knows good and well that we should not be on skates, and especially during season. Well, I was. And I don't think I've ever mentioned the name of my high school because I don't want my high school to get in trouble. But we just gonna leave it at that. I'm not gonna give the name of it. But in my ankle was broken. It would have been better for me. It was like a hairline fracture, but it would have been better to have a full break because it was also, it was because it was like a hairline fracture. It was almost like a severe, like my ligaments and stuff. Like even to this day, this ankle, I'll just be walking and it'll like touch the ground. Like it'll just like roll. It doesn't hurt. It just is very weak. And when I was in high school, I was getting injections in the ankle so I could play. Fast forward a couple of years later, those injections caused me to have a lot of scar tissue build up in my ankle, which caused the fracture that essentially ended my career for basketball. Anyways, for college. So I just kind of, you know, I stuck with it. I continued to stay in the with the program that I transferred to, which is Lipscomb University. I stayed around doing managerial duties, and then I was like a student assistant to one of the assistant coaches. I was just kind of watching her and learning, and that is when I started being like, I think I want to be a coach. And the particular year, and I also ended up doing, ironically enough, I could clear a physical to be do track and field events. So I did shot put, discus, and javelin, which you guys have heard me talk about that before. I did that in college as well. So when I was asking the particular coach, you know, because my senior year, once I was wrapping up with basketball and things like that, the girl who was the GA, she had just started. So if you guys don't know anything about GAs, which is, just means graduate assistants, they are typically there 2 years because that's typically how long it takes you to get through a graduate program. And we only had one. Lipscomb is a small Division I school. They were NAIA the year before I transferred into there. But they were Division I. They're in Atlantic Sun Conference. And they only had one. I know some schools have multiple GAs, but Lipscomb at the time only had one. And she had just started. So it was pretty much like, you're going to have to find, you know, some other avenue to get your grad school paid for and to figure out what you want to do, you know, with the whole coaching thing. So basically what I decided to do was there was a local high school. There was a guy by the name of Ronnie Siegenthaler. Love Coach. We call him Coach Sig. He's who jump started my career. He was in Brentwood, Tennessee. He was one of the winningest coaches that go through that program. Very knowledgeable, very, very good offensively minded coach. His plays were like stupid, like he like the backdoor cut. I mean, like he was like a genius with the plays, and I learned a ton from him. But I was his varsity assistant for 2 years, 2.5 years, Because like when I started, because I graduated, because when I transferred, I like lost a semester, kind of. So I had to do an extra semester. So I didn't graduate in May like everybody else does. I graduated in December. So once I graduated, I started with that high school program. So it was like in the middle of their season, right at Christmas break. And so that's why I say half a season. So I started then, and then I did two more years, and then I was also the head JV coach as well. And I did that for 2 years, and then I was like, okay, I think I want to take this to the next level. However, a lot of college coaches have a master's degree. So, you know, I had my undergraduate in exercise science with a double minor in coaching and nutrition. So I was like, okay, I got some kind of health, you know, I mean, you know, something to deal with exercise science with a lot of, you know, majors for coaches and things like that. But I was like, you know, I want some administrative duties behind it so I could, I was really looking into basketball operations and things like that. And I also wanted to do player development. So I told Coach Sig, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to go home because I'm from Atlanta. I was like, I'm going to go home. I got accepted to Georgia State. And then I was going to get my master's. And in the meantime, anytime you're a coach, you should always work camps. Any camps, any schools, even like if that particular state has, and at this time it was Blue Chip, they had big camps in the state of Kentucky. And I just so happened to stumble upon that and just started working their camps every summer. And college coaches typically coach in those conferences, especially NAIA, not conferences, but camps, and especially NAIA coaches, because there's not too many rules like NCAA. And so I started to meet a lot of coaches, a lot of networking, and I told Coach Sig, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and go, I'm going back to Georgia, and I'm gonna get my degree. My graduate degree. I got in the program. And when I was up there last working the camp in Kentucky, one of the coaches there, she was pregnant and she needed an assistant. And she called me. And she called me legit July. And I was supposed to start classes in August. And I was like, you know what? This is what you want to do. You got your break. Go for it. So I moved to Kentucky, in the boonies of Kentucky, to St. Catherine College. And I was there for five or six years. Yeah. And there was a lot of things that I learned what to do as a head coach, things I learned not to do. Things I learned to do from an athletic director's perspective, like as far as the how to handle the programs. And that school eventually kind of went under from financial stress and had to close their doors. But it was a good experience. And I don't know if you guys know in NAIA programs, they do have junior varsity programs as well, which is like the B team for the varsity. I was the head coach of that. So I was in charge of my own recruiting for that, my own budget for that. So you kind of get that collegiate head coach experience doing that. And then I was also her head assistant. Excuse me. And I was also her head assistant. And we were pretty decent. When I first got there, it was our last year in JUCO and we were transitioning to NAIA. But going to NAIA, it was cool. We went into the Mid-South Conference, which was the most competitive league, I would say so, in NAIA. But I did that for 6 years. And then I left college because, and actually when I left, that team was actually pretty good. But sometimes it's time to move on, from a situation. I'll just leave it at that. It was just time to move on. There are some things as, and legit, this is no shade to anybody. This is just me being honest because you know, asked why I left. There are some things as an assistant coach that I'm willing to put up with. And then there's some things as a Christian I'm willing to put up with. And then the Christian and this next one kind of go hand in hand. But there are things as a human being that I'm willing to be okay with. And there were some things that were going on that I was just not cool with. And I don't know. I wasn't raised like that. So I felt it was time for me to move on. And they ended up doing well the next year and went to the national tournament. And I still keep in touch. And some of them are actually my good friends now that played for those teams, because I was fairly close in age to them when I did start coaching. Because I moved to that school to coach my first year on my 25th birthday. So you can, we were fairly close in age, some of the players. So basically, right after that, I think it's really good as a coach to be able to get in front of people for interviews. I didn't have enough experience. At that point, it was going to be about who I knew, but I had two finalist interviews for a position where it was down to three candidates and I was one of them. So I felt good about that, at Cincinnati State, and then it was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Heck, I can't even remember the name of the school. That's crazy. But it was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I was a finalist for both of those. And it was such a good experience. And I wasn't discouraged that I wasn't chosen. I was actually happy, because, like, if you don't know about interviewing for jobs like that, like, it's multiple levels to the interview. And then when you finally make it to the final interview, like, it's like you're interviewing with like a ton of people in the room, and they're asking you tons of questions, and ones that you really don't prepare for. So it was just an excellent experience, and I enjoyed it. And I didn't get those two jobs, and then I was kind of like, I need to build my head coaching resume, right? So that's why I kind of was with that. And so then I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do next? So I started doing AAU coaching, and I do not like coaching AAU. I will say that. It's a lot. It's a lot. High school, I coached high school, and then I went to coach semi-professional basketball. I coach a women's semi-professional team in Louisville for 2 years. And I'm trying to think what else. I mean, I've got like 15 years of coaching experience. And then a friend of mine, I was helping him with his AAU program, and he was actually my assistant coach at the last high school I coached at. And he knew I was just going to help him with like the administration portion of it, because I did actually end up getting my master's. I actually ended up getting two masters, because when I left the college, I ended up going into the healthcare field. So I do have a master's in sports administration, and then I also have a master's in health information technology, which is what I use in my daily job today. And I was coaching at the same time, because, you know, you can coach in the afternoon for the high school. And my assistant coach, he was getting ready to be the director of a program in Kentucky, probably one of the larger AAU programs in the state. And one of the head coaches had a death in her family, and he asked me to take over. And he knew I don't like AAU, but he asked me to do it. And of course, being me, I said yes, to help him out. Clearly, only just to help him out. And I think, and not to put it on him, because it's not, because I could have said no, but I think a combination of coaching that AAU, coaching AAU, and then coaching the high school that I was at was why I was like, you know what? I need a break. I need a break. Or because this is my thing when you coach basketball. Unless you are on the men's side, high division one, on the women's side, high division one, you can go work a regular 9-to-5 and make more money with way less hours. right? Even at the high school level, if you're actually like, I'm a coach that I told you, I'm going to give my program, your kids 110% of me. So when you're sleeping, I'm up thinking about what we're going to do for this next game. When practice is over, I'm out scouting at another game. I'm writing reports. I'm getting ready for practice. That's what I'm doing. These are outside. And you know, high school, you get little stipends, right? When it becomes about the money for coaching, it's time to get out. For me, that's how it was when I was at that college too. You know, I didn't agree with some things that were going on. And also, I was like, and y'all ain't paying me enough for this, period. It's time for me to go. Because when I purely do coaching, I'll be like borderline poor, right? It's like, man, I love this. I'm poor, but I love it. I love my job, right? And that's how it should be when you coach. Because the moment where you stop loving it is going to affect those kids. And that's not fair to them. Even if they are the cause of it, it's not fair to them that you're not giving them 100%. But I'm going to say this. The thing with the AAU program, like I said, the coach, and this was just me pure being an outsider because I wasn't the director of that program. This was just me helping him out. I never went to games unless I was going to see a specific player. I didn't go to their tournaments. I never went to watch them play. So when I came in the transition into this team, they had already had a head coach. Right. So you're trying to step in and take over for somebody who essentially didn't even have an assistant. So my thing was this. I'll do it. One, I'm not doing it by myself because I'm a firm believer in your head coach. You're only as good as your assistant. And I wanted a good one because some of these AAU programs just have parents coaching them and it's a hot mess. So but I actually got a parent who's actually a good coach. And I was like, look, we're going to do this together. And then you have to get, and then it was like a struggle because you got to get the kids to buy in because you just pretty much took over for their coach who they loved. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, no fault of her own, but it was just, even to this day, I have no idea what happened. I just know she lost a loved one. It was her son. And, you know, as a mother, if I ever lost my son, I don't even want to talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I get it. And so the director felt like somebody needed to take over to where she could properly, you know, grieve. And I get that. So it was like a combination of trying to, you got a coach that plays certain people somewhere. And then you got another coach come in and I see something totally different and you're not going to play. Or you're not going to play as much. Or you're going to play a different position. You know what I'm saying? Just a lot of stuff. And then with AAU, the reason why I don't like AAU is because I already think parents are absolutely ridiculous. you have some parents that are great. Some that are great. And then everybody else is just ridiculous. And the thing with AAU parents is they're paying for it. That's where I can't really... Because it's like, I feel like... A lot of people pay for their kids to play AAU and they aren't good. They aren't good enough. That is not shade. That is not trying to degrade your kid. That is not, I'm not doing that. But I'm just saying some of them are paying their money for no reason. I get it. You want your kid to get better. Go put them in some kind of other program in the summer, like a camp to get them better. But paying thousands of dollars for AAU, that's silly. And so because they're paying, they feel like they're entitled to tell you that their kid is going to play. And unfortunately, I'm not set up that way. No, your kid doesn't work hard. They're going to sit the bench and you're just going to waste your money is how I see it. So then you get pushback from parents. Like for one thing, I could really care less what parents say. They get on your nerves. But for me personally, I don't care. You can talk about me all you want to. I'm still going to give your kid 110% of me. I've never been a coach like that to where I'm going to take it out on the kid. No. But it does affect them in college because college coaches just won't recruit them if the parents are insane. Parents, do better. But a combination of that and then the high school that I was at, I'm going to go on record saying this now. I will never in my life coach at a Christian school ever again. Ever. And me saying that is how I see, and as a Christian, that's hard to say. I see why people are non-believers. I really do. The is fake. And then it's a all-white Christian school. They mistreated, like, parents. They were cool with parents. It was, this is the deal, right? You have talented black kids that play there, right? It's probably like one each year, like one black kid each year, then they leave. That's your best player. So why are you hollering at a child in the stands to pass the ball? Make it make sense. She don't need to pass the ball because she passed to your daughter. She gonna throw it over the boat, throw it over the backboard in the ocean. Like, I don't get it. I understand team basketball, but at the end of the day, baby girl, the ball has to go in the hands of the best player, period. And you come into, I came into a culture of basketball where they were looking at me crazy when I said we were going to do conditioning. What basketball program has never been through conditioning? Make that make sense to me. Like, you legit have to run to play basketball. I don't understand it. So what comes along with that type of culture you're trying to change, they don't know how to win. One, they don't know how to win. When they lose, they don't care. I am not built like that. I am way too competitive for that, and I will lose my mind. Because like I told you, I am like Jekyll and Hyde when it comes to freaking like my personality, when it comes to coaching. I will lose my mind. Seriously, like, especially kids, little freaking entitled little kids who don't care that they just took an L by 50 points. Nah. And this was the thing about that team. I liked the kids. I actually did. I thought they were cool. I could tell that a lot of them had their parents in their ear. So they would try to like act out on the court to like, Because at the end of the day, those kids have to go home to those parents. So they're going to listen to them over their coach who they're just going to see for that practice or that game. You see what I'm saying? So I understand that about kids. But it's too much for a coach to try to have some kind of internal struggle with a player because their parents aren't getting on board for whatever reason. Because when I got to that school, like I said, they didn't know how to play as a team. Because even though you have a star player, you can still play as a team. And I was trying to instill that in them. But you just have, I mean, the parents act like children. It was insane. It was insane. It was insane. And a combination of that, athletic director not having your back, just crazy. Crazy. And it was just insane. So between that and AAU in the same year, Tarika needed a break. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to move to Texas and I'm going to take a break. And that's what I did. And currently I'm still on that break. You know, before the pandemic, you know, I enjoyed my time with my son. And all the time that I was met, I mean, because he was coming, like, that's what I'm talking about, guys. When you coach, you give up family time. I mean, I was going from picking him up, taking him to practice with me. He was sitting on the bench during games, like, just insane, like, just taking the time. And then you have a nerve to try to give me attitude as a parent? Stop. Parents would drive you absolutely crazy if you let them. With me, I never had, I told you guys in this one episode, I don't really have a relationship with parents, and people think that that is not right of me. But you can't, because then they think they can control you. And then it's like a double-edged sword, because it's like, then they think because they don't know you that they can give you grief either way. And truth is, baby boy, you don't know me like that. It's like, I'm here for your kids. That's it. And when I say, I don't look to make relationships with parents, what I mean by that is I don't mean that if I see them, I just ignore them. No, I'm going to see you. I'm going to speak. You know, if we're at a tournament that weekend, I'm like, how you guys doing? You having a good time? You know, to that extent. But hanging out with you, having drinks with you, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not about to do that. No, because then you think you're going to get favoritism when your daughter's riding the pine because you can't seem to get her to practice. You see what I'm saying? So it was like a combination of that. And I just felt like everybody was so fake at that Christian school. And I just don't understand that. It's like, guys, we are supposed to be Christians. We are supposed to. It was just a lot of unlike Christian behavior going on. I was like, that is not Christian behavior. And I just didn't understand it. And I don't know. I didn't like it. And yeah, so a combination of both of those. I had to get out. That was my last straw. I will say this. If I do coach again, it'll never be AAU, ever. I hate coaching AAU, period. I've gone on record saying that 1,000 times. Don't ask me if you're in a bind. I'm sorry. Go ask somebody else because the answer is no, ma'am, ham. high school, I don't know. These parents, boys. Parents, I don't know. High school is a question mark. College, I definitely would. I will say this about high school. I'll never coach at a small private school ever again in my life. Ever. Ever. Because anytime it comes to deal with people who have money or put money into it by paying private, the parents are just different. They're just different. There's this sense of entitlement that comes along with their dollars. And my thought process and their thought process, we don't mesh well. Because you're not entitled to anything under a program that I coach. You work hard. You work your butt off. You show up. You support your teammates. And you be a good human being on and off the floor. You can play for me. But just because you're good at basketball, I'm supposed to overlook everything else? Nah. No, you're going to be a good person or you won't play for me. Period. And if your parents give me a hard time, both of y'all can go on your merry way. Seriously. So that's why I got out of it. Any other people, I'm not discouraging you from coaching those levels because you could be the crazy parent yourself. And so you coaching that will take a lot off of everybody in the gym. but just keep in mind, AAU is very, very politic-ish. It's very political. And it deals with you playing with people's money. You don't play their kids. Even if they're not good. And I just can't get behind that. I'm not about to put you in a game and you're horrible and you need to be swimming. Sorry. Go play badminton or go play hopscotch outside with your friends. But basketball, that ain't for you, baby. But nobody's going to say that. Everybody's going to sugarcoat because, you know, this is the generation where everybody gets trophies. I'm not about that generation because I'm not from that generation. But coaching, I miss it and I don't miss it. I definitely miss the traveling. I miss the networking and things like that. And maybe one day I will get back into it. But because I've never lost my love for the game. There were times I thought I was losing love for the game because people were making me not love the game. And then that's when you know it's time to get out. So you don't lose that passion for it. But, you know, basketball is my ish. You know, even if I'm just chopping it up on a podcast about it, I'll talk about it all day long. Sports in general. In football, I don't even know that much about. I mean, I know the basics of football. I know the concepts of team sports and things like that, so I can comment on that. But as far as rules and stuff, I just pretty much listen to the commentary. I don't try to, because I told you guys when I watch basketball on TV, I watch it as a coach. Like, I try to, like, coach them as I'm watching it in my mind. I don't do that for football. I just enjoy it. I love it. But that's my take. If there are coaches out there that are listening, please be mindful of how you treat kids. Because it affects not just them, but it affects your assistants as well. Be mindful of how you handle these kids, their parents. I just think you start playing with fire when you start going out for drinks and dinner and hanging out, because then your expectations kind of get fuzzy as far as what they expect from you when it comes to their kid, because a lot of people are irrational when it comes to their kid. But I can tell you this, Grayson, I don't know if I've ever mentioned my son's name, but his name's Grayson. When Grayson gets older, if he's not good, I'm always going to encourage him to play high school sports, because it doesn't matter. You can be, you're just a part of a team. You might ride the bench, but I'm not about to pay for you to play AAU. Sorry. Just so you can hang out with your friends. No, you hang out with your friends when they're home from weekend breaks, because I'm not going to spend my money and you're not good, because it makes AAU bad. Like when I played AAU, it was so competitive. It was so good. We had a national tournament. Now it's just like they had to make it so the good teams are in a certain like bracket in EYBL. Like those are where you find your good teams. That's where your competition is. That was not it when we were in, when we played AAU. It was all competitive. And girls basketball is losing its competitive edge at these tournaments, because it's like, why is this team on this floor? And you have 1,000 teams in every single state. Why not just have one good program in each state, and it just spreads out into the different counties? Like, everybody wants to be a coach. Like, just stop. Stop. But we'll see. We'll see if I coach again. But if I do, great. If I don't, that's fine too. God didn't have that for me. You know, he didn't mean it for me. So I figure everything God has for me will be for me. And it's meant for me. But I hope everyone has a great week. We are going to talk about fitness. We're going to talk about the meal prep for real on Thursday. ironically, we're going to talk about fitness and meal preps while we drink wine. or a cocktail, or bring your water and be good. But we're gonna talk about that. But I hope everyone has a great week. Stay blessed, stay safe. I'll see you guys on Thirsty Thursday.